Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, April 12th, 2017. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho lawmakers want Attorney General to not recognize Governor Butch Otter's veto of the grocery sales tax repeal bill because the veto came too late. Spokane City Council wants more civilian oversight of the police department and wants more oversight of civil forfeiture collections. And Seattle Mayor Ed Murray denies sexual assault claims. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Two Southern Idaho lawmakers have asked the Secretary of State to not recognize Governor Butch Otter's veto of the grocery sales tax repeal bill because Otter did not veto the bill within 10 days of the legislature's adjournment, as required by the state constitution. When Otter vetoed the 6% grocery tax repeal yesterday, he said the 10-day period started when the bill was delivered to his office Friday, March 31st, not the day the legislature adjourned for the year, which was Wednesday, March 29th. Republican Representatives Ron Nate of Rexburg and Brian Zollinger of Idaho Falls say they may sue to have the repeal put into effect. The state constitution says on the topic of gubernatorial veto power, quote, unless the legislature shall, by adjournment, prevent its return, in which case it shall be filed with his objections in the office of the Secretary of State within 10 days after such adjournment, Sundays excepted, or become law. The words Sundays excepted are in parentheses. A split Idaho Supreme Court opinion in the 1978 case, Senarusa versus Andrus, says governors have 10 days from the time a bill is delivered to the governor's office to veto it. The opinion says the governor's consideration of a bill is an essential element of the legislative process. Presentment provides an opportunity for the governor to give full consideration to a bill as finally passed by the legislature. The wise exercise of the executive right of veto necessarily requires thoughtful deliberation, which in turn requires time commensurate with the responsibility. The Idaho Falls Post-Register reports Zollinger and Nate say the 1978 decision was the result of judicial activism and not a reading of the Constitution's text. Rebellious legislative Republicans stripped income tax cut language from a bill during this year's legislative session and replaced it with language repealing the state's sales tax on groceries. The individual and business income tax reduction would have impacted the highest tax bracket by reducing the tax from 7.4% to 7.3%. Republican leadership had been clear they favored the income tax reduction and tried to get replacement bills passed, but the rebellion prevailed and House Bill 67A passed both houses. The bill also phases out the state's $100 income tax credit for groceries over a two-year period. Sales taxes are considered regressive because they impact a bigger percentage of the income of poor people, while income taxes generally tax wealthier people and businesses at a higher rate. Grocery sales taxes in particular have a regressive reputation because the poor spends a larger percentage of their income on essentials such as food and housing. In yesterday's veto message, Governor Otter claimed the benefits from the grocery tax repeal would be small. Otter wrote, quote, the costs of this particular proposal are too high and the potential for imminent financial need too great for the small amount of tax relief it would provide. The truth is, this bill's benefits are largely imaginary, while the downsides are many and very real. I understand that House Bill 67 has captured the popular imagination. It purports to provide tax relief for the working poor, a worthy ambition, but one that is already accomplished through the grocery tax credit. Otter also suggested lawmakers take a comprehensive look at tax reform options next year. quote, particularly the wisdom and continuing utility of the multitude of tax exemptions in Idaho code. The repeal would reduce state revenue by $53 million per year, but would actually cost the state $79 million because lawmakers included language distributing $26 million more per year to cities and counties from the sales tax collections in order to make up for the money lost by the loss of the grocery tax money. The state has a sales tax distribution formula that gives money to city and county governments, which changes under the grocery tax repeal law. Governor Otter is not expected to run for re-election in 2018. Republican Lieutenant Governor Brad Little, who is one of four Republicans considering a run for governor, issued a statement expressing disappointment in Otter's decision to veto House Bill 67A. Little wrote, "I remain committed to tax reform, including a more sustainable solution for all Idahoans on the grocery tax. Idaho is a leader in the nation in job growth, wage growth, and economic prosperity. In order to keep Idaho as a leader, we need to always be looking at our overall tax structure. Removing grocery tax for all Idahoans remains the right thing to do, and I look forward to traveling the state and visiting with Idahoans about all taxes that impede on their ability to prosper. Idaho's economy is moving in the right direction. Idahoans are working and revenues are up. And as Lieutenant Governor, I am committed to keeping it that way." Also yesterday, Otter said he would let the $320 million transportation package become law without his signature. The transportation bill would use $300 million in Garvey bonds borrowed against future Federal Highway Administration allocations to repair roads and bridges statewide. Washington Governor Jay Inslee toured Western State Hospital yesterday and expressed encouragement about changes made at the hospital, which had been cited for numerous health and safety violations last year. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services gave the hospital until July 2nd to fix the problems or lose millions of dollars in federal funding. Western State Hospital CEO Cheryl Strange said the hospital has been made more secure after two dangerous patients escaped last year. Nursing Supervisor Paul Vilja told the Associated Press the State Social and Health Services Department has added administrative positions, but there is still a shortage of psychiatrists and nurses at the facility. The entire Spokane City Council signed a letter Monday to Mayor David Condon asking for more civilian oversight of the police department and limiting how many overtime hours a single police officer can work. Mayor Condon is set to negotiate a new contract with the Spokane Police Guild later this year. City Councilmember Lori Kinnear told the Spokesman Review the letter was a way for the City Council to get more citizen concerns inserted early in the negotiating process. The newspaper's public records request revealed the Spokane Police Department paid $4.4 million in overtime last year, with $2.4 million going to 211 officers. The council wants Condon to negotiate an increase in the type of incidents police ombudsman Bart Logue can investigate. They also want rules changed so the ombudsman can make rulings on whether police department internal investigations into officer misconduct are accurate and complete. They also want a requirement that the police department respond to any ombudsman recommendations within 30 days. Council President Ben Stuckert told the paper the panel is united in their call for more ombudsman empowerment. Stuckert said, "Everyone told us after the last round of negotiations that they didn't think it went far enough." In a related matter, six out of the seven Spokane City Council members are in favor of a proposed ordinance giving the council the final say in how the department uses proceeds from civil forfeiture. Civil forfeitures of purported drug profits are controversial because in most states, including Washington, police do not need a conviction or even need to have charges filed before they can seize assets allegedly coming from drug proceeds. Critics say police departments are increasingly using civil forfeiture proceeds to bolster department revenues. Police department data shows Spokane police gained an average of $170,000 per year from civil forfeiture between 2012 and 2015. The department also received an average of $68,000 per year during the period from civil forfeitures resulting from joint operations with other law enforcement agencies, including federal police. Some of the proposed civil forfeiture ordinance will codify policies put in place when the Spokane Police created the Civil Forfeiture Unit in 2014. City Councilmember Breanne Beggs told the Spokesman Review only Councilmember Mike Fagan opposes the changes in the civil forfeiture law because Fagan believes the best way to deal with the issue is to prohibit police from seizing assets without a criminal conviction. That's similar to a bill passed by the Idaho legislature last month, but vetoed by Governor Butch Otter last week. Idaho for Wildlife, the organization that has put on Idaho predator hunting competitions held in Salmon, says they want to expand the contest to other parts of the state. Idaho for Wildlife Executive Director Steve Alder said the group is looking to hold the so-called wolf derbies in other national forests in northern Idaho. Alder said potential locations include Sandpoint, Bonner's Ferry, and Orofino. The announcement comes after a federal court ruled in the group's favor in a lawsuit arguing the group needed a special use permit to conduct the event on Forest Service land. Environmentalist groups said in their complaint, the Forest Service's decision to grant permission for the hunting event was arbitrary and capricious, and that, quote, the killing contest is an organized event involving time limits, cash prizes, and hundreds of participants, and has a greater impact on forest resources than recreational hunting, unquote. In a 20-page ruling last month, U.S. District Court Judge Ronald Bush said Idaho for Wildlife did not need a permit from the Forest Service because the event is non-commercial and because the group doesn't collect entry fees from participants. Judge Bush also said since no permit was required, the Forest Service violated no laws or internal policies by allowing the event to take place. Bush also ruled the group did not need a permit for non-commercial large gatherings because the group met in the city of Salmon and not on Forest Service land. Alder said Tuesday, having this lawsuit out of the way and having this legal precedent, we will probably consider it a lot greater now. Seattle Mayor Ed Murray says he will move forward with plans to run for re-election despite sexual abuse allegations from three men who say the assaults happened when they were younger than 18 and when Murray was in his 30s in the 1980s. The allegations became known Thursday of last week in a Seattle Times report. Murray spokesperson Jeff Reading said last week, it is not a coincidence that this shakedown effort comes within weeks of the campaign deadline. In a 2-minute press availability, Murray denied the allegations made in a lawsuit by one of the men who said Murray sexually molested him repeatedly beginning in 1986 when he was 15 years old. Murray said of the allegations, they were very painful to me. It was painful for my husband. The 61-year-old Murray is married to his partner of 24 years, Michael Shioski. Murray also told reporters, things have never come easily to me in my life, but I have never backed down and I will not back down now. He declined to answer questions from the press, saying it is now a legal matter that is in the courts. The report in the Seattle Times last week said two other men told the paper Murray abused them when he lived in a center for troubled children in Portland in the 1980s. The Times reported one of the two men spoke with a social worker and detective after the alleged abuse, but no charges were filed. Through a spokesperson, Murray denied the allegations of the other two men. During 18 years in the legislature before he became Seattle's mayor, Murray co-sponsored Washington's same-sex marriage law and was at the forefront of the state's effort to ban discrimination based on sexual orientation. He also led the effort to pass laws that protect LGBTQ youth in public schools. A 24-year-old Washington State University student and Pullman City Council member has announced he will run for U.S. Congress next year. If Democrat Matthew Sutherland, a political science and physics student at WSU, were to win, he would be 26 when he takes office. The seat Sutherland plans to run for is currently occupied by 5th District Republican incumbent Kathy McMorris Rogers. Sutherland's campaign is part of a larger grassroots movement called New Blue, which focuses on putting younger party members in leadership roles in a bid to energize the Democratic Party. Sutherland told the Daily News, "The New Blue idea is that we're not the Democrats of yesteryear." Sutherland has already challenged a fellow Democratic contender, Spokane City Council President Ben Stuckert, to a debate. Stuckert declined, saying in a recent interview he would not participate in a debate until 2018 or until he has toured the district in its entirety to gain better understanding of the issues in the area. Sutherland said his primary qualification is that he is a member of the working class. Sutherland said, "We have to get rid of the idea that you're only qualified if you have an executive, a lawyer, or if you have political experience." Sutherland is also on the Pullman Police Advisory Committee, the Michael F. Lange Foundation Board, and a sergeant in the U.S. Army Reserves. Sutherland said, "We're trying to make running for office as accessible to the American populace as possible." You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Police apprehended a 21-year-old Spokane man after a high-speed chase that ended on the Troy Highway near the Moscow Cemetery around 2 a.m. yesterday. Nez Perce County deputies tried to pull over a black Honda sedan driven by Jason H. Stratton Harper on U.S. Highway 95 after Stratton Harper made a traffic violation. Police say the Honda sped up to 90 miles per hour and twice continued going after tires were punctured by spike strips. The first spike strips laid on the road by a state trooper punctured two of the car's tires near Ede Road, and Moscow police spike strips punctured the two other tires just south of Moscow. The spike strips slowed down the car slightly each time, but even after all four tires punctured, the car continued at 50 miles per hour through Moscow. Stratton Harper is in the Latah County Jail facing charges of possession of a stolen vehicle, possession of methamphetamine, and eluding. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, there is a 100% chance of rain tonight. Low 40, between a quarter and a half inch of rain possible. 90% chance of rain before noon tomorrow, then a chance of showers, high 50. And on Thursday night, 60% chance of showers before midnight, then rain after midnight, mostly cloudy, low 35. There is a 60% chance of rain and snow showers before noon on Friday, then rain showers likely in the afternoon, cloudy, high 48. West winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 20. And 40% chance of rain and snow showers Friday night, mostly cloudy, low 32. Little or no snow accumulation expected. Saturday, partly sunny, high 49. 20% chance of rain and snow showers. Partly cloudy, low 34 Saturday night. And mostly sunny, high 54 on Sunday. Currently 55 degrees at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport. Coming up next, we have Between the Lines, weekly news magazine, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine, airs at 7:30 p.m. tonight, and we'll have episode 11 of the ZBS radio drama Saratoga Springs at 8. Music begins at 8:30 with Grateful Dead Through the Decades, and we'll have Donald Trump Theater at 10 p.m. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $40, $20 for students and low income. You could go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP, or you could mail the memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. That's KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. I'm Lee Robartis, Scott Jackson, assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Remember, all editions of the KRFP Evening Report are available for streaming or download shortly after broadcast from the KRFP website. Have a good night.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and Hyperspud Sports, specializing in equipment for outdoor adventures. Hyperspud Sports is located at 402 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, call 208-883-1150 or visit hyperspud.com.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.